This is a recording of Stuart H. Van Ness, 7402 Lake Breeze Drive in Seven Lakes, building number 22, apartment 405, Fort Myers, Florida, 33907. Van's phone number is area code 813-482-6802. The recording was made by Jim Walkinshaw of the Oldsmobile History Center on January 20th, 1989 at Van's home. This is tape number one of one tape. Van also maintains a home in Michigan at 400 Lakeview Court, apartment 19C, Spring Lake, Michigan, 49456. Van's phone there is 616-846-2277. Well, Van, if you could just start with your name and your address and your phone number, if you would.
Okay. This is Stuart Van Ness, and we're enjoying Fort Myers, Florida. The street address is 7402 Lake Breeze. Our condo number is 22-405. We do have a telephone. Area code is 813-482-6802.
You remember what your zip is here?
33907 is our zip.
Okay.
And for those of you who want to visit us in Michigan, the address is 400 Lakeview Court, number C19, Spring Lake, Michigan, 49456.
Okay.
Give us a call first.
You got a phone up there, Van?
The area code is 616-846-2277.
That's great.
Great for sunshine in both places.
Now, maybe you could just back up to when you started at Oldsmobile. What you started doing, what you were, where you were, and so forth. What was going on?
The year is 1948. After applying for a job in the Forge plant, I received a call from then Thomas Darden, saying they'd started a proposed college graduate and training program. There wasn't a soul in Oldsmobile that knew exactly what they were going to do, but he guaranteed it would be a good program. And so that's how we came to Oldsmobile.
Okay.
After my wife graduated on Wednesday, I graduated on Friday, we got married on Saturday, came to Oldsmobile the following Wednesday, and went to work on Friday.
Wow, that's
1948.
Busy week. What did he have you doing?
Actually, I was not assigned to Darden.
All right.
I was assigned to then the director of purchases,
all right,
Abe Crutzen, in the purchasing department.
Okay.
And I spent a year and a half moving around all the departments, all over the plant, before getting a permanent assignment.
Now, did you stay in?
I was under the direction of the staff head,
Abe Crutzen, all that time.
Wherever he wanted me to put me from 1 week to 4 weeks while I worked.
Okay.
And in some cases, they let you work. In some cases, you just had to sit and watch. Each one did it differently.
Uh-huh.
And it did give us a tremendous background. Jack Ridenhour was one of my program.
All right.
A couple of people in the sales department I've now forgotten. The one that just retired, Jackson, from Jacksonville, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that became our form. Then
Once
in purchasing with a permanent assignment, we went like everybody else. We went to work and did our jobs.
What part did you have in the purchasing area?
Okay, started out in machinery and equipment buying.
All right.
And then we had went to steel department.
Okay. This is production steel.
Production steel.
All right.
And then we went into the production parts, back to non-product procurement,
mm-hmm,
supervisor, then back to purchasing, and then worked our way around to a director of purchases. And then when Bob Truxell left to go to Delco Marine, it was then when I became a staff there.
All right.
And
when was that? Remember the
back
the
that dates? Probably about, no, I really don't.
Okay, well, don't that don't feel bad.
I imagine that's about 1973, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
So.
And then you retired, when did you retire?
By 1980.
Yeah. Okay. So that was kind of the progression that you went through.
And then with Truxell leaving, was along with the job came the assignment at the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, okay.
It was, again, it was an example where Oldsmobile is in there, you know, pitching to help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you did one thing, you had to make a contribution on the outside.
Sure, sure.
And Truxell felt that as long as he had them both, I could have them both.
Okay.
And that's how we grew into
that. Uh-huh. Okay. So. But, Van, during that, then you watched the purchasing department change from being within to watching it from overhead, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of happened during that many years of span? What significant changes occurred? Did we change how we did business?
Well, yes. There was one element that crept in. There was a strong ethics program.
All right.
Got started, probably about 1959 when that started.
Okay.
And, you know, became more and more of a thing.
Yeah.
We also went into a lot of group buying. Instead of buying just for Oldsmobile, you were the source establishment. It was the forerunner of today when just the engineering releases now go,
mm-hmm.
and you buy it based on an engineering release. But we'd establish a source and we were responsible, and then other people would come to us and find out who you bought, or we'd go to them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And now it's become sophisticated with engineering releases and stuff. So that was the forerunner of it.
All right.
And where you bought just for one plant, and all the plants, and then back into it.
Do you remember how many folks were there when you first started?
I'm going to estimate around 60. Something like
okay.
that.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they have that many now.
Okay.
You know, with computers and dialing and consolidations, well, I don't think there's anywhere near that.
Where was your first office?
In the old building.
Building 60?
Building 60.
All right.
And we were on the part over the old administration garage.
Oh, yeah. Right up off the lobby there.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Cold in the winter and hot in the summer.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
Then when we moved to the new building, of course, we had the third floor off the lobby.
Yes.
Which was convenient.
Yes.
And then, let's see, another thing that changed, I'm trying to think when that was. That had to be about 1970. When they assigned purchasing in with production and traffic, all material began to focus into a head.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Cook was our first staff head for that, that triad of departments.
That bigger group.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it made a very logical move because you had the whole procurement, material, moving, shipping,
mm-hmm.
all in the head to be responsible.
All the materials handling and all of the internal plant as well as external was inside of that.
Mm-hmm. Including even the cars and the trucks of all the cars were
there. Prior to that, those were all separate
They were separate, yeah.
Uh-huh.
There was no common head until you got to the general manager.
Oh, really? Okay.
Uh-huh. Which, you know, at Oldsmobile didn't really make too much difference when you reported
that. Yeah.
You know, I experienced that with Mooney, and when he died, you know, all the guys didn't make any difference. We just went for the job. You know?
That's right, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But in some divisions, you can see where this could be a problem.
Yeah.
And it sort of grew and made logical sense. And probably along with that, purchasing industry-wise became more sophisticated
mm-hmm.
and beginning to earn their spot in the world.
Did the bosses that you worked with over the years, like Abe Goosen, can you share with me some of how they did their business and the kinds of managers they were?
Oh, well, let's see. Abe Goodson was a veteran and did a lot of work himself.
Okay.
Because he didn't, that was the technique of the day.
Yeah.
That was the technique of the
day. Wasn't that he didn't trust folks?
No, all it wasn't any of that.
Yeah. Okay.
It was, it grew as a hands thing, and as it got bigger, it stayed there.
Yeah.
And then Tom Darden took his place.
All right.
And
did Tom manage it in a different fashion?
He of course was a manager, and being new to purchasing, he needed more reliance. You know, in other words, it's the old question: if you haven't done it, you've got to rely on some of the people that have done it. And so that was sort of a natural outgrowth.
Okay.
And then Bill Haight followed.
Okay.
Tom Darden.
How did
and Bill had a lot of purchasing experience and. There wasn't too much difference in that stage.
Okay.
Except it was right in toward the end of his assignment that we joined into the big group.
Okay.
And then Bill left in 71, I think it was. And that's when I was made director of purchasing.
Okay.
And
so now you had a different kind of boss, though.
That was when, see, Bob Cook was
okay.
Boss there.
So you had
that. We were part of this whole triad of material activity.
He was the materials and management director or something of
and
that
then
nature.
Also, as you began to get these units combined, the corporation had, with common design and interbuying, became more of a cooperative director. They didn't buy the parts, but you did a lot more cooperation between divisions.
In the early days, did the corporation help or hinder, so to speak, or was it hands off?
They kept their hands in on predominantly steel and tires.
Oh, that's interesting.
Steel and tires.
Why those two individual
allocations was probably the biggest reason.
Okay. Steel was in short supply.
Oh, yeah. After the war, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of corporate allocations.
Uh-huh.
And the tires were group buying. Maybe it was the first group buying when you look at it, you know.
Okay.
The big contract power.
Sure.
But then, of course, they weren't equipped to buy everything.
Yes.
And so they began using various divisions to be responsible for certain things. And it was done, you were responsible for the item that your engineering department designed.
So we paralleled then the engineering force that we had. Okay.
And now I think maybe they've even crossed lines of that. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. How about general managers? Can you remember any of those, Van, that you can share with us their managerial skills or techniques or whatever that you can bring back to mind?
Well, the one the closest was our Bob Cook.
Well, sure. Yeah, I know.
That's recent, you know.
Yeah.
I think earlier than that, I don't know that I did work for Howard Carroll for a short time before he went. And he was a man that had a good engineering background. And then the tragic Baker sequence.
Yeah.
So just
well, John Belts was there somewhere.
John Belts was there.
Yeah. Did those individuals like Carroll and Belts have a fairly good feel for the materials world and the purchasing world, that sort of thing?
only in relation to the respect of what we were doing.
Okay.
They did not have a hands-on. They were came through the engineering deal.
Yeah.
And so here again, they relied heavily on those who had done and would do the job.
Yeah.
And
were they the type of individuals that would listen to those recommendations that would come from your organization, or did they have different ways of doing that?
Never had any problem with them not listening yet.
All right.
Cook's background understanding allowed him to respond easier, you know, or with less effort.
Yeah,
he understood. He didn't need a background explanation on why we were there sometimes.
Yeah.
And so from that standpoint, it's great you get those ones.
Sure, sure.
And, but so far as the others, No, they have a record that has been great.
Yeah.
It's been great. So,
so you sat in a lot of staff meetings over the years.
Through the years.
Did those change any of the what I'll call the approach that people use to solve problems and do things in the staff meeting over those years?
Oh, I don't think so. They dropped the formalities a little bit.
All right.
Of you know, written minutes and all this type of stuff. And,
okay.
And report. That was sort of dropped along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these people were pretty great doers.
Mm-hmm.
And not spending a lot of time on the formality.
Mm-hmm.
The job was out there, and that's where we went.
Yeah.
So well, each one has a little different technique or a little different personality, which
is
always get with people.
What would you say was maybe the main purpose of the staff meetings that you had?
Like every meeting, you got to all get together and have a communication.
So it was really a sharing of information.
Sharing communication and,
all right.
and a presentation in relation to what you were doing that others would be interested in.
Yeah. It was not necessarily a decision-making meeting?
There was some of that.
Okay.
Because it was done when everybody was there
and
the general manager was...
Yeah.
He could make a decision after he heard it, and if it required it, well.
Yeah. Okay.
And those people usually knew where we were going and what they wanted. It wasn't didn't require a lot of hemming and hawing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really nice.
Yeah.
It was nice.
What do you think maybe was the most significant happening during all those years that you spent there?
Probably the first million car year.
That million car thing. Yeah,
that sticks up to me. We could enjoy that, and that was great. I think the other thing, and that's just sort of, you know, when you say significant,
yeah.
is a personal pride, company pride, or sociological pride. And I think the other part was when really long before the media got a hold of minority problems.
Mm-hmm.
General Motors was starting. And it's hard to explain, but that was a great event. I mean, if you look out, what do you do socially?
Mm-hmm.
So you pay your taxes and you work on community things. But I think the participation in that, and women, development of those was probably a tremendous
feeling.
And we met with some successes and some not so good.
Like most things.
But in that line, I know that we had a minority supplier day. Sort of patterned after, here again, General Motors had us attend one in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
on a national level. And coming home, everybody was sort of given a little assignment, what can you do about it? And we had two of our people, Bill Holland and Don Cassidy, and we kicked around, and we had our own on a small scale. Probably had 60 vendors come in, and we taped it, videoed it, and we had it shown. The timing is right sometimes, right? Before we retired, it was shown in Detroit with the then Pete Estes and Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in to watch it, and they stood up and applauded
for
what
that.
We had accomplished,
it's
for what we were trying to do, our opposition.
Yeah.
And I guess that was a little pride involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I did use that when we came down here. People don't know what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get that story out.
Yeah, that's
so true. You know, people said, well, if General Motors had done something about minorities. So we used the benchmark. You know, we hired our first black, I think, in working for me probably in about 1960. And you know, when did this come to a point?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was pretty early.
It sure was. Long before people heard of it, hardly.
So, yeah. That was your own accomplishments,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Over those years, too, Van, we probably had some, what I'll call, problems that may stick in your mind that I think of things like the Chevy engine schmas, the 58 air ride program, some of those kinds of things. Any insight into those kinds of things?
No, I guess the only thing you'd say, when you had a problem, we were all pretty close together and pitched in and got it done.
Yeah.
And never experienced anything where somebody really went to work to pin it on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the normal
responsibility
type of thing, but it wasn't huge efforts to get busy and
mm-hmm.
pin it on somebody so I'm clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess another thing you can be grateful for, because a lot of places you can't say that.
Yeah.
A lot of places you can't say that.
Yeah.
And there was always, you know, get it fixed and go.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about the air ride, Jim.
Just happened to run across in the archives the other day.
Yeah.
Oldsmobile was what I would call reasonably successful, and probably a lot of reasons for that, but what do you think maybe were some of the outstanding reasons for our, quote, success in the marketplace and success as an organization?
As an organization, it's because we were physically close to everybody.
Okay.
And early on, you started working to those goals. Now, you can be physically close and you can have local people different than city people, but you still got to work on it.
Yeah.
And some of this was done long before we had fancy names.
Yeah.
And if you just think back of most of your supervisors and stuff, were all on the battleground,
mm-hmm.
and they had an understanding, and that's pretty important. You know, you talk QWL and quality centers and listening to people.
All the new.
We did a lot of those things when you didn't have names for them.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were naturally adept at it or worked at it a little bit better. And there were supervisors that didn't.
Well, sure.
Basically, I think maybe because of all of that,
mm-hmm.
you got there. You got them, and they were well trained from some of these, having done the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a good package.
Mm-hmm.
Good product helps your sales. There's no doubt about that. And there were some innovations.
We had some pretty good products during those periods
and,
of time.
So we, you know, I guess that's all part of the
mm-hmm.
part of the ballgame.
Did the steel buying business change much over those years?
Oh, yes. That's from when you begged and wiggled to get the last ton.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we didn't buy any foreign steel.
It all came from on the States.
All were in the States until I think we bought probably just a little foreign steel starting early 70s.
Mm-hmm. What precipitated that move in that direction?
It had to become world competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start out to protect our national assets, and that's great. And I wish we could have kept doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, but then eventually you're competing around the world,
right?
And you got to make everything level. And it was a big transition to
mm-hmm.
see some of these steel companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read about them now, and you wonder, you know, how could this ever have happened?
Mm-hmm.
happen because there was too much cost and not enough efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Did other industries have similar kinds of problems that we were dealing with?
Well, some of the big tire companies have changed hands.
Yeah.
Firestone.
Yeah.
Big family controlled General Tire.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I think of that probably, you know, how could it have happened to them?
Yeah.
But Firestone now is Japanese owned.
Yeah.
Under Bridgestone.
Bridgestone, I think, maybe. Yeah.
So,
did the move to plastics and those kinds of things create any kind of special happenings from your view?
Well, you saw a change from the old die casting industry,
All right. Which
is now very minute so far as automotive, to into all the way now into plated plastics.
Okay.
So you saw a whole new industry.
Did those people that were doing die cast transition to that?
Some did, and some weren't as fortunate in
their
outlook, and they just sort of died, you know.
Yeah, like the buggy whip makers.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I guess that's all a matter of talent, foresight.
Sure.
Some people.
Willingness to change and whatever.
And then, of course, now you're buying a lot of parts offshore. I mean, that's a coming thing that you tried to protect. But that also became the same thing. If you're going to compete around the world, somebody's got to transist back.
Yeah.
Can you transist backwards?
I would think so. You would think you could go either way.
I mean, you know, it just became part of the game.
Did we have
electronics industries, of course, Delco.
Yeah, that's
then Delco Radio,
right.
Delco Electronics. They probably, I'm not sure if they were the first GM people that went offshore.
Yeah. But I think of things like starters and generators that traditionally we would always buy from whoever, Delco, Remy, or whoever it was, and that must have been a shock to some people.
Gradually, that became as a push to get. They had to become competitive outside.
Mm-hmm. Did some of our supplier divisions resist that sort of thing during the early days of that sort of push?
Most of them were anxious to get in and compete against the Allied divisions.
Yeah.
And then going offshore, you had a variety of some of the larger Allied suppliers were going overseas with some of their divisions.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they brought back these things that they could do.
How did our Allied guys do all that?
Well, it's tough to take, you know.
Yeah.
And you had a balance. You got a General Motors responsibility.
True.
And perhaps that's when the corporation got a little more involved too, because somebody has to make decisions on the overall picture, not just what's good for you, Jim. It's what is good for the corporation.
Yeah.
And they're the only ones that can know that.
Yeah.
So, but there was still a lot of heat on us to make an Allied division. That was a basic ground rule. They had to be competitive.
Yeah. Any interesting occurrences occur during that time when you had to do some pushing and shoving, so to speak, to get things to happen?
Oh, I can't remember anything specific.
Okay.
But they were there.
Yeah, I'm sure that we must have had some real knockdown dragouts, so to speak. Okay. Now, back up a notch, somewhere in there, you had mentioned the Chamber of Commerce, kind of in the middle there someplace. You had been very active in the chamber as an individual because of the particular position you had. You eventually became the president of the chamber?
Right.
What year was that, Van?
Well,
remember? Don't need to. I can find
mid-70s.
Okay.
So mid-70s, yeah.
What, can you remember back to your term and what kinds of things might have been going on at that juncture?
Well, it was a period of development. The first year I was active, the director retired, and we went through hiring a new
See, was that Al Boyd?
Al Boyd retired.
All right.
And Ed Alberti came in.
All
right. So we were part of that selection process.
All right.
And then we, that was the first year. And then the second year, we started getting our feet on the ground with a new director and where do we want to go, what can we do? And then the third year, I was president.
Okay.
And then that was a year that we said, okay, now we got a program, now we got something to throw, and we got to get more people involved. Because there was a whole group of peoples around Lansing that weren't involved.
That were not members of
not
the organization?
Members of the chambers.
Uh-huh.
So that was the year that I was there. The kickoff was to get people to participate.
All right. Growing in numbers.
So now as you grow in numbers, you've got to use these numbers for something. And that was started about the year after I was president.
All right.
Of having concrete programs and being strong enough to make themselves feel.
What were we doing for members during that time frame?
Okay. It was probably one of the problems of the early
chapter. Okay.
Really was. In other words, it was you weren't strong enough to do a whole lot.
Okay.
I mean, it had to be low key, and you didn't
yeah.
have it. And as you got numbers, then they began to get better, more good people. It wasn't mm-hmm. left to just a few. And Nan Martin brought a lot of realty people in, and there's a lot of strength there so far
yes.
as wanting to do something.
Yes.
For Lansing, because they wanted realty.
Sure. Part
and,
of the business.
You were able to get more people in, the hotel people and the restaurateurs and the business, small business groups and stuff. So they began to make themselves feel involved. During that time also was when EDC started.
Okay.
And it was sort of a parallel or in a way, so far as goals, with the EDC having a specific thing of,
mm-hmm.
of developing and bringing in new business. But they were parallel.
That wasn't part of the chamber per se, was
no.
it? That was a separate
no.
organization.
That was a mm-hmm. Lansing, City of Lansing.
Yeah, activity. All right.
So.
Did, during the selection process, when you changed from Boyd to Alberti, was it?
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things did you folks have to do? How many people did you look at, and what did you advertise?
The chamber has the U.S. chamber has facilities for distributing information,
yeah.
and then we advertised in several papers around Michigan.
Okay,
and we probably had. Probably 100 applicants.
Wow. Okay.
Most of them were from other chambers, either
mm-hmm.
the normal thing where they wanted to come to a bigger city. They were had been Michigan people and mm-hmm. went to
Ohio
or someplace to come back.
Uh-huh. But they were generally executive directors of some kind, and maybe a smaller
all
chamber.
All but one that we really uh-huh. ended up interviewing
okay.
had been executive chambers,
uh-huh.
or executive directors of other chambers.
Okay.
And we settled in Alberti from
okay.
Ohio.
What was his task in those days?
They actually pretty much run and did it.
All right.
I mean, remember the board.
Yeah.
We're all workers. They had jobs to do.
Sure.
So you couldn't devote a whole lot of time to the hands-on operation.
Yeah. You'd call Ed and say, can you do this or that or the other thing?
We even looked to them for ideas.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And, I know after I got out, one of the things was, what can you do to get started on a hotel project?
Mm.
And I think Mike Warren sort of, that was in his period,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and he sort of took that on and spent a little more time on that than we could have.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't to say the chamber did it, but
oh, no.
you got to get support for it.
It's a voice.
That's a long time idea,
yeah.
a long time
yeah.
goal, so
yeah.
it's what you can pitch on. Ed Hardin helped us tremendously as we became stronger in working with the state legislature. And,
who else was on the board at that time? Do you remember any other individuals you were working with?
There was Mike Warren, and I mentioned our gal, Ann Martin, mm-hmm. Jim Anderton, mm-hmm. Ed Hardin. Just trying to think of some others.
Okay.
There was a big early cross section. Yeah.
Early good cross section of folks.
And
And the term was 1 year?
President was 1 year, yes.
Uh-huh. Was that generally the way we... Yeah, I noticed that when we did our historical thing, it looked like most folks were 1 year.
I think so, yeah.
Did that seem to be a problem at all?
You worked with you had a board,
yeah.
And you had an executive committee.
Yeah.
And that executive committee, you could be on there for 2 or 3 years before you became president.
All right.
Then you became president, and then you stayed on 1 year after as past president.
So there was some overlap.
So there was a lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems is you can't devote that much time to it 2 years in a row.
Yeah. It was a fairly heavy time drain sort of thing.
Well, it was like probably 3 hours a week, mm-hmm. which when you have another job,
when you've got a real job,
you know, and scheduling that in.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always those extra things to do.
Sure. Oldsmobile was fairly active in the chamber during that era?
By virtue of its position in the community.
Uh-huh.
They subscribed, like you said earlier, memberships, and always somebody in there at a key spot.
Uh-huh.
Which they showed up both as a contribution and as...
Sure.
Because watching what was good for us, too.
Yeah, and they had some talent available, yeah. Obviously.
So it was well used.
Yeah.
I guess, well, okay.
So that was kind of the...
It was quite a career.
The chamber.
It was quite a career.
Okay. Any particular thing that would stick in your mind that might be of interest to people 10 or 20 or 30 years from now that... And they stand back and say, gee, is that how we did our business back in the good old days?
If I said that, my predecessors would be saying the same thing.
Yeah. did any of the, over the years, we had some strikes, not only ours, but I remember in some of the industries that supplied us.
A lot of supplier strikes.
Did those things create any peculiar problems for us, Van?
Special handling, alternate suppliers,
okay,
and restricted car productions.
It did, at some times.
Lots of times.
Uh-huh.
Was not uncommon.
Okay.
And then, of course, sometimes it was actually shut down.
Yeah. Laying parts around and that sort of stuff? Remember doing any of that?
It grew to be a common occurrence. And both from helicopter, charter planes, single-engine planes, to big C-47s before we got through.
How in heaven's name did we ever try to keep track of the 15,000 or whatever number of parts there are in a car so we didn't get ourselves lost in the swamp?
Computers.
But we didn't have computers all of that time you were here.
Well, remember, we didn't have all those parts then either.
Yeah.
You know, it was simpler.
Back when you started, it was all piece of paper, wasn't it?
A lot of it was a printout. In some cases, we'd start with a number of cars.
Yeah.
And then how much per car, and run it out on a computer or calculator. Well, it wouldn't be a computer then.
Not that time. Yeah.
And
it must have been either
adding machines,
multiplications,
punch jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you'd make your handwritten releases out.
Did the computer era, did that significantly, other than people, did that significantly change our approach to things?
I think allowed us to become more diversified. you know, used to have three cars.
Right.
98, 88, and 78.
Super 88 or something.
And all of them, you know, were a lot of common parts.
Yeah.
And again, it was just this division, mm-hmm. virtually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then as you began adding car lines, I don't know if the computer caused that or whether the computer allowed us to do it.
You
know, I think the computer allowed us to do that.
Yeah.
And so it just became a way of life.
Yeah. It was absolutely mandatory that we had one at the end, obviously.
Oh, yes.
See, did the schedule guys work with you, too?
Mm-hmm.
Or were they part of the thing?
They were part of the program.
And the creation of the schedule, how many cars we were going to build, how did that kind of get formulated?
Well, again, that came in conjunction with the sales department.
All right.
Gordy Osborne was the one that was there the spell of
yeah.
the longest, and then
yeah.
Tom Smith.
Yeah.
But from there started, or maybe total cars from, you know, marketing,
yeah. Yeah.
corporation, business outlook, and then everybody's opinion and guess and estimate as to where it would be divided.
Okay.
And eventually get broke down. Constant reminder to remain flexible because
yeah.
it could change.
Well, yeah, like
and
the,
it did.
Like the 74 period when
yeah.
when the energy crunch happened.
Right.
Well, we just couldn't get it shut off, could we, hardly?
No. So, mm-hmm. We've survived them all so far.
Yeah. yeah.
Interesting that in Wall Street Journal this last week, there was an article about would GM be able to withstand the potential recession of 1989.
Oh.
And I just sort of chuckled a little bit. I said, you'd think we'd never done it before.
Yeah, we've been through a jillion of them.
So
yeah.
the answer to that would be a quick yes.
Yeah, right.
That's great.
Okay. Well, let's see if there's anything else I could think of. And anything else you can think of that would be of interest to folks? As time wears on.
Well, we may have done our jobs.
We may have done it. Yeah. Okay, I will shut her down now.
Well, I think it's great, Jim. I really that you
we've
are doing this.
We've had a lot of fun doing it. So.